Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second hour of the Arizona Republic. This is the Sunday, October 5th, 2025 edition, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. Today, I'll be covering the obituaries, the local business, and sports news. Then we'll move to some opinions and end up with the horoscope and the comics. So I hope you enjoy the program today. I'll begin with the obituaries. Joanne Bentley, 85, of Peoria. Robert Ralph Bingham, 79, of Scottsdale. Christy Gig Coppinger, 69, of Scottsdale. Jacqueline Ann McCreary Cromit, 79, of Scottsdale. Rudolph Delgado, 88, of Queen Creek. Janet Dunapace, 85, of Phoenix. Danielle Erb, 70, of Surprise. Mike Callis Gomez, 100, of Tempe. Christopher Peter Notavange, 70, of Mesa. Michael Paul Holdsworth, 75, of Raleigh, North Carolina. Suzanne Lesher Huck, 101, no town listed. Dr. Gregory V. Inda, no age, of Scottsdale. Billy Ruth Job, 79, of Garfield, Arkansas. Mary J. King, 85, of Scottsdale. Gwennifer L. Law, 79, of Green Valley. Sylvester Mabry Sr., of 88, of Phoenix. Richard E. Mackey, 92, of Phoenix. Robert Bruce Malcolm, 85, of Scottsdale. Richard Marchese, 76, of Sun City. Elizabeth Ann Matthews, 86, Paradise Valley. Marion Murray Dorsey, 73, of Anthem. April Lynn Osborne, 78, of Phoenix. Helen Peterson, 103, of Prescott. Elizabeth Sears, 99, of Scottsdale. Curtis James Stewart, 91, of Avondale. David Swan, 93, of Goodyear. John David Van Houten, 78, of Chandler. Sally Christine O'Connell Vasey, no age given, of Flagstaff. And that completes the obituary list. I'll turn now to local business. There are two articles in the business section of today's paper. The first one is titled, "These Arizona Companies Announced Mass Layoffs," by Corina Vanek of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. Arizona posted positive job growth in August, but some large layoffs affected businesses around the state. According to the Arizona Office of Economic Opportunity, Arizona's economy added 38,500 jobs in the 12-month period that ended in August 2025. The state's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate remained at 4.1%. slightly lower than the U.S. unemployment rate, which increased slightly from July to August, reaching 4.3%. Year after year, the sectors that grew the most in Arizona were health care and social assistance, which added 23,500 jobs, financial activities, which added 4,900, and construction, which added 4,800. A shuttering Tucson call center and a contract termination for airline catering caused some of the largest layoffs in September in Arizona. Four companies announced mass layoffs of 50 workers or more since the last state jobs report in late August. Companies signal layoffs mostly through worker adjustment and retraining notification alerts, or WARN notices. Hardly any of these employers responded to requests for more information, but several of them are outsourcing or staffing companies that appear to have lost contracts or faced funding cutbacks. The total number of job cuts announced in the latest batch of WARN notices was 935. Here are the companies that announced 50 or more recent layoffs. Syracom, merger costs hundreds of healthcare jobs. In Tucson, Syracom International Inc., a translation service for healthcare providers, legal firms, banks, emergency dispatch operations, and other industries, is closing after a merger and laying off about 500 people. It plans to execute two waves of layoffs. About 130 employees will be out of a job as of November 1st. The remainder will be cut in December. The majority are translators in Spanish, Arabic, Mandarin, Russian, and other languages. LSG Sky Chefs. Half the workforce let go after contract canceled. In Phoenix, LSG Sky Chefs, an airline catering company, will cut about half of its local workforce after American Airlines did not renew a contract with the company. Sky Chef's plan will affect cooks, commissary staff, and tarmac delivery drivers, according to Unite Here Local 11, the labor union that represents most of Sky Chef's Phoenix-based employees. About 259 workers will be affected by the layoff, according to documents submitted to the state. The company will continue to operate in Phoenix and is working to grow the business here, Kimberly Plaskett, a company spokesperson, said. Intel, layoffs for efficiency. Semiconductor company Intel added to its ongoing layoffs, announcing the loss of an additional 97 jobs. The additional job losses bring the total layoffs at Intel to almost 800 people. Intel officials had previously said the layoffs would result in a leaner, faster, and more efficient company that would be better positioned to serve customers' needs and committed to treating affected employees with care and respect throughout the process. According to the Arizona Republic 100 list, Intel is the state's 18th largest private employer, with about 9,400 employees in Arizona. The company has a large advanced manufacturing plant in Chandler, where it does wafer fabrication, packaging, research, and development. McGee Air Services, Inc., closing Sky Harbor Station. The company, an affiliate of Alaska Airlines, announced layoffs of 79 people, closing the station at Sky Harbor. The company is an aircraft management and aviation services company. And that ends the article. The title was "These Arizona Companies Announced Mass Layoffs," by Karina Vanek of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. The second article on the business page is titled "Culture Fit Hiring Could Sabotage Team Success." That's from Sharon Wu, special to USA Today. Job interviews often end the same way. The hiring manager asks themselves, would this person fit in here? It's a common practice. 84% of recruiters use culture fit as a key hiring factor, according to the Society of Human Resource Management. Here's the problem with that question. Hiring managers are confusing values alignment with personality matching, says Christina Brooks, a partner at national recruiting agency MICA Consulting Group. Would I grab a beer with them? And do they make me feel comfortable? become unofficial screening criteria. This translates to hiring for social comfort and sameness instead of the skills that actually drive results. Brooks explains how well-intentioned culture fit hiring sabotages team performance. The most dangerous part of echo chambers isn't what teams say, it's what they never think to question. When everyone shares the same professional background, they make the same assumptions about customers, markets, and solutions. Brooks saw this play out with a startup client that insisted on hiring only candidates from their industry. "We presented diverse candidates with fresh perspectives, but they chose someone who thought exactly like them," she said. "When the company tried to expand into new markets, it struggled. No one on the team understood different customer needs or cultural nuances." Culture fit hiring also provides cover for discrimination. Fit often becomes a proxy for comfort, gravitating toward those who look, talk, and act like us, Brooks said. This perpetuates bias across gender, race, socioeconomic background, and communication style. Companies encounter this pitfall even when they try to diversify. At one large consumer products company, leadership requested a woman for a marketing role. Brooks presented qualified candidates of all genders, but the company picked a male candidate as the best fit. The hire performed well, but the decision showed how subjective fit assessments quietly override diversity intentions. Instead of fit, progressive organizations focus on adding culture, diversity, and structured hiring, Brooks said. And that completes the article, Culture Fit Hiring Could Sabotage Team Success, by Sharon Wu, special to USA Today. And that's the business news for today. I'll move now to local sports. The front page story on the sports section is titled Hamilton Flag Football Number 1 in U.S. The Arizona Republic is following along with the Chandler Hamilton Flag football team this fall in a video documentary series, Beyond the Gridiron, featuring an azcentral.com. 4 games into 2025, Hamilton, ranked number 1 in the country by USA Today Sports, looks like its usual dominant self coming off the first undefeated flag football season in state history. But it got off to an uncharacteristically rough start. In the season opener against Gilbert, Hamilton trailed 3-0 in the second quarter. Last season, the first and only time that Hamilton ever faced a deficit was in the 6A championship game against Mesa Red Mountain. Hamilton quickly rebounded, entering halftime with a 7-3 lead before exploding for a 21-point third quarter on the way to a dominant 35-3 win over Gilbert. It was an early season test for a roster that was replacing a majority of its starters from last year's title-winning team, and the Huskies have taken the lesson learned from that game and applied them going forward. The next 3 games were a return to form for the Huskies. In the second week of the season, Hamilton beat Peoria Liberty 47-7 in a home matchup, and then made the long road trip to Waddell to play Canyon View in a game that pitted the 6A and 5A defending state champions against one another. And it wasn't close. Hamilton routed Camel View for a 48-7 win, leading wire-to-wire again to extend its winning streak to 20 games. The third week of the season featured just 1 game for Hamilton, and it was another convincing win, also coming against another West Valley school. Hamilton beat Surprise Shadow Ridge 58-0, moving to 4-0 on the season. This is a team that has been built around the connection between its two superstars, sophomore quarterback Marley Phillips and senior wide receiver Samaya Taylor Jenkins. It was that connection last year that turned the Huskies from a good team to a juggernaut, with Phillips tossing for 69 touchdowns as a freshman and Taylor Jenkins coming down with a state record 39 of them. With all of that comes increased focus from opposing defenses, and that was apparent in the first game. Gilbert held Taylor Jenkins to just 19 yards and one touchdown on four receptions. This has allowed for the emergence of a new player, junior wide receiver Markiah Riley, who has taken full advantage of secondaries, focusing on her teammate. Riley, a transfer from Glendale Ironwood, had 9 receptions for 119 yards and 3 touchdowns against Gilbert, before following it up with 4 receptions for 85 yards and 2 touchdowns against Liberty. The last game against Shadow Ridge was her best yet, with 14 receptions for 164 yards and 4 touchdowns. Her progression has been and will continue to be a key for Hamilton moving forward. But like Hamilton coach Matt Stone said, sometimes you just have to feed the beast. Taylor Jenkins, one of Arizona's best prospects at making a future United States Olympic flag football team, had her coming out party against Canyon View with 7 receptions for 146 yards and 4 touchdowns. Her evening was highlighted by an 86-yard touchdown to open the second half. Phillips has been lights out through 4 games. She has thrown for at least 4 touchdowns in every game and has incorporated a running element to her game this season. Phillips is 87 for 123 passing, 70%, for 1,111 yards, and 20 touchdowns for the season. The defense, led by junior rusher Demi Woods and senior linebacker Asia Denson, hasn't been at the same caliber as last year, which only allowed 3.3 points per game. But that can be hard when the standard is set so high. Make no mistake, this is still an elite defense, arguably the best in all of Arizona, and there's plenty of time left in the season. 2 young players, freshman center Athena Vasquez on offense and freshman rusher Caden Kistler on defense, have proven to be immediate contributors, early on in their high school careers, a critical development not only for this season and the coming years. There are challenges that lie ahead this fall for Hamilton in pursuit of a second straight undefeated season. The Fiesta Bowl, Copper State Invitational, an in-season tournament featuring top teams from 6A, 5A, and 4A, is coming up in early October. There are then consecutive games against the two mountains, Mesa Mountain View and Glendale Mountain Ridge, both of which are worthy opponents. And then region play immediately follows. Helping with that is Hamilton is about to welcome one of the top transfers in the state, senior wide receiver and defensive back Mariah Green. At Phoenix Mountain Point last year, Green set the state record for most receiving yards in a single season with 2,502. In the background, Red Mountain at 5-0, which is proving to become an arch rival of Hamilton, and Gilbert Highland at 4-0, both loom as the two schools with the best chance at taking down the Huskies. Each team has looked excellent so far. There's a chance for a Hamilton versus Highland showdown at the Copper State Invitational, but the two schools aren't scheduled in the regular season. Hamilton won't meet Red Mountain until the 6A playoffs, which start on November 12th and last until November 22nd. And that completes the first article, Hamilton Flag Football Number 1 in U.S., written by Logan Stanley of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. The title of the second article is NFL's Dirty Kick and Does It Really Work? By Bob McManaman of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. An interesting new tactic is afoot in the National Football League, and it's creating such a buzz that it's putting the special back into special teams. The sudden rise in successful lengthy field goals, the spike in blocked kicks, and the most special teams touchdowns scored, 11, at this point in 13 years, have done nothing but add to the intrigue. But the biggest development has been the arrival of the so-called dirty kick. It sounds worse than it is. You see, before the 2025 season, the league decided to move touchbacks from the 30-yard line to the 35-yard line to help increase the rate of kickoff returns. It has worked just like the NFL had hoped, with a return rate of about 77% before Week 4. According to NFL Executive VP Jeff Miller, about 32.8% of kickoffs were returned last season. Entering Week 5, there have been 18 kickoff returns of 40 yards or longer, and the 3,624 total kickoff return yards amassed during Week 4 were the most in a single week in NFL history. The kickers needed to find an edge to counter the surge in returns. Most are adapting a strategic kicking technique that makes it more difficult for returners to field the ball. Mostly it's variations of a squib kick into the landing zone, the area between the team's goal line and 20-yard line, designed to disrupt the rhythm of blocking schemes and the return itself. When it works, returners have less time and space to find creases in the coverage, and it can lead to minimal gains and routine tackles inside the 20-yard line. That, in a nutshell, is what they're calling the dirty kick. That's the term we use. We use dirty kicks, Arizona Cardinals special teams coordinator and assistant head coach Jeff Rogers said on September 30th. People have different terms for those alternate kicks. There are some guys around the league who are really, really good at it. And what I've come to see is, to some degree, almost every team has attempted multiple versions so far this year. Sometimes it's just taking the hang time out of it and being more of a line drive. When it doesn't work, you get what happened to the Cardinals during their 23-20 Week 4 loss to the visiting Seattle Seahawks on Thursday Night Football. After pulling off a successful dirty kick that helped pin the Seahawks at their 22 with just under 6 minutes left to play, kicker Chad Ryland attempted another one after Arizona tied the game with 28 seconds remaining. But that effort resulted in the ball striking the ground at the 21-yard line, just short of the required landing zone, and it resulted in a touchback that gave the Seahawks the ball at the 40. Three plays later, Jason Myers drilled a 52-yard field goal to win as time expired. "We didn't hit it as clean as we wanted to," Rogers explained. Cardinals coach Jonathan Gannon refused to cast any blame on Ryland, saying, "Chad played his ass off. The game doesn't come down to one play. We didn't do enough collectively for 60 minutes to win the game." Rogers, a special teams coach for the 49ers, Panthers, Broncos, and Bears, before joining the Cardinals in 2018, has a great deal to discuss in strategy sessions. "We all play by the same rules," he said, But yeah, there's more things to consider this year from both a return and a coverage perspective than there was a year ago. One of the NFL's masters of the dirty kick has been Joshua Carty of the Los Angeles Rams. Carty has developed a dangerous knuckleball-type kick that makes the ball nearly impossible to field cleanly. The Cardinals don't face the Rams until Week 14, but Rodgers said Ryland has been busy trying to perfect his own version and said his returners are being coached up on how to snare tricky kickoffs by using different simulating launch devices. "We're working on it," Rodgers said, adding of Ryland, "the one he hit in the Seattle game worked out great for us. There's been other kicks where you're just trying to move the returner so he can't catch the ball running downhill at you." Special teams play figures to be in the spotlight on October 5th when the Cardinals host the Tennessee Titans at State Farm Stadium. The Titans might be winless at 0-4, but they feature the league's leading kickoff returner, rookie Shamir Dyke, who's averaging 25.2 yards per return. They also have an innovative coordinator, John Fassel, whom Rodgers said might be ahead of the game when it comes to blocked kicks. There have been 16 blocked kicks overall on field goals, 10 punts, 4, and extra points, 2, entertaining Week 5 the most since 2014, when there were 19 blocks through the first 4 weeks. Rodgers said he noticed Fassel's strategy last season in his final year as special teams boss for the Dallas Cowboys, when he began instructing his defensive front upon the snap to swipe at the arms of opposing down linemen, almost like a kickstand on a bike, while they were in their protective 3-point stance. The would-be blockers tend to lunge forward, thus creating an over-under gap to help gain an edge for a potential blocked kick. "Everything Tennessee is doing is legal," Rodgers said. "I don't want anybody to misinterpret what I'm saying. The dirty kick is also legal and isn't likely to go away anytime soon." The name of the article was NFL's Dirty Kick and How Does It Work? By Bob McManaman of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. And that completes the sporting news for today. I'll take just a moment to remind those of you that may have tuned in late, this is the second hour of the Arizona Republic, the Sunday, October 5th, 2025 issue, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader today. I'll turn now to some opinions. I'll lead off the opinions with one by Abigail Van Buren in her Dear Abby column. Friend's holiday card never includes wife in address. Dear Abby, every year, like clockwork, we receive a holiday card from friends, which the wife addresses only to my husband. It is always a jolly card filled with their family adventures and achievements for the year, and it invariably leaves me wondering why she thinks it's okay to leave me off the envelope. My husband and I have been together for more than 20 years. She knows I exist. We have met. I went to her wedding. Her husbands are dear friends. Last year, my husband finally mentioned to his friend how much it hurts my feelings to be left off the card. He seemed surprised his wife did that, but said he'd fix it before the next cards went out. I was excited at the thought of her changing her rude ways when their next card arrived, but like every year before, I was left off again. This really bothers me. I have felt left out enough times in my life, and it stings at the core. I feel like she is a grown-up, mean girl, and I can't figure out why she would intentionally not include me. part of me wants to send a card to everyone in her family and leave her name off. What do you think? Left off in Wyoming. Dear Left Off, I think that because expecting your husband to intercede for you didn't work, it's time to pick up the phone. Tell this clueless woman your first and last name and ask her why she seems unable to address her greeting cards so they include you as well as your spouse. If after that she continues to forget you, we'll know beyond a doubt that she's not only clueless, but classless, and avoid whatever exposure you must have with her as often as possible. Dear Abby, I have a longtime friend, Lori, who is single. Most of the relationships she gets into are with men who are in relationships already. She often suggests that my husband and I and she get together to hang out, but I discourage it because I don't trust her completely. I do trust my husband. Lori and I have been there for each other during difficult times, but I struggle a lot with the fact that she has relationships with married men or men who are in other committed relationships. I have been tempted to tell the partners of these men, but I stay in my lane and mind my own business. It eats away at me sometimes, and I feel like I need to end the friendship. Then I feel like friends should be there through thick and thin. Can you give me some guidance? Signed, Uneasy in the East. Dear Uneasy, your friend Lori has boundary problems when it comes to men, which she has shown you repeatedly, because you are not comfortable with the idea of you, your husband, and Lori socializing together. Listen to your intuition and refrain from arranging it. Because you disapprove of her lifestyle to the extent that you are thinking of ending the relationship you have with her, tell her how you feel. She needs to hear it. That's the end of the column. You can contact Abby at www.dearabby.com. That's with a capital D and a capital A. Or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her article was titled Friend's Holiday Card Never Includes Wife in Address. This next opinion comes to us from Leanne Maskell, a guest columnist. Her title is Trump, Kennedy Fundamentally Misunderstand People with Autism. As an autistic woman living in the United Kingdom, I find something deeply chilling about the most powerful men in America instructing women on what to do with their bodies and babies. This is even more so when their statements directly contravene all reputable evidence, causing immense confusion and chaos worldwide for highly vulnerable people. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said President Donald Trump believes that we should be listening to those mothers instead of gaslighting and marginalizing them like prior administrations. Freed from what Kennedy called their silencing and demonizing, these women are now center stage. However, they now have a new responsibility. According to the clear instructions of President Trump, even if that means rejecting scientific evidence. Don't take Tylenol if you're pregnant. Fight like hell not to take it, the President of America passionately declared. There's no downside. Fevers in pregnancy can harm both mother and child. Migraines and infections can make everyday life unbearable, shaming women for accessing safe, widely used pain relief is not noble. It's dangerous. Leading UK autism charities issued a joint statement warning that such claims are stigmatizing as well as a distraction and act as an impediment to progress. The science backs this up. The review cited by Trump's team found only an association between prenatal Tylenol use and autism, not causation. Its senior author, Andrea Baccarelli, had previously testified in lawsuits against Tylenol manufacturers, which were thrown out because of inaccurate evidence. As Judge Denise Coate ruled, the unstructured approach adopted by the plaintiff's experts permitted cherry-picking, allowed a results-driven analysis, and obscured the complexities, inconsistencies, and weaknesses in the underlying data. Large-scale studies tell a different story. As UK Health and Social Care Secretary Wes Streeting highlighted, a major Swedish study involving nearly 2.5 million births found that once sibling control factors were applied, even small associations disappeared. Amid the confusion and public panic, Streeting stressed the truth that there is currently no reliable evidence linking the use of paracetamol, also known as acetaminophen, during pregnancy to autism in children. This fits the broader consensus. Autism is primarily genetic, with heritability estimates of 70 to 90%, not the result of a simple environmental exposure such as taking Tylenol during pregnancy. Kennedy dismissed the idea that autism's rise reflects better awareness and screening, contrasting with numerous studies. The common sense he cited behind this was the lack of 70-year-old men head-banging or toe-walking in public. Given that 97% of autistic people aged more than 60 years old are undiagnosed, it's reasonable to assume that they have simply learned their limits within a neurotypical society, believing themselves to be broken. If they are still alive, that is, autistic adults face an average life expectancy of just 39 to 58 years. And it's known that those without learning disability are up to 9 times more likely to die by suicide than the general population. Neurodiversity is as natural as biodiversity. However, our man-made society can often create distress for people who think differently. As a child, I was labeled difficult, running away from home, screaming in public, and banging my head against the wall, spending 8 hours a day in classrooms where I was misunderstood and shamed for my differences left me feeling as though I didn't belong, resulting in severe suicidal ideation that continued into adulthood. It is only when we name it to tame it that we can understand, support, and harness these differences. For me, seeking an autism assessment after a screaming meltdown in an airport at the age of 31 finally unlocked support for my severe anxiety through targeted medication, but most important, understanding. Today, as an autism and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder coach, I've helped countless families, adults, and children reframe their own approach. And they all have one thing in common, regardless of neurodivergence, blaming themselves. But instead of shaming themselves, we work on acceptance. That can provide a gateway to understanding our needs and taking personal responsibility, contributing our unique talents and skills to society. Trump's proposed cure, leucovorin, misunderstands autism. It's a spectrum, not a problem to be erased. Until now, medication hasn't typically been prescribed for autism because this neurodevelopmental condition affects brain structure as opposed to neurotransmitters that can be targeted, as with ADHD. We simply run on a different operating system, like Google versus Apple. A MacBook remains a MacBook even if you try to load Google software. Likewise, even if taking medication eased some challenges, autistic people would still be autistic. Instead of attempting to control the uncontrollable, the administration could try a new approach, acceptance. This is unlikely to happen anytime soon, but every single person has the freedom to make this bold change. Ultimately, this starts from within. Being different is not your fault. Trusting the widely proven medical advice from doctors and global health organizations was not a mistake. If you took Tylenol while pregnant, you did nothing wrong. If your child is autistic, it is not because you are weak. It's because that's simply how their brain works. The author Leanne Maskell is a National Specialist Coach of the Year, the founder of coaching company ADHD Works, and best-selling author of AUDHD, Blooming Differently, and ADHD Works at Work. She lives in London. Her title was Trump, Kennedy Fundamentally Misunderstood People with Autism. Our next opinion is by Carolyn Hacks in her Ask Carolyn column. Denied a lucrative beach house listing, agent sells out friendship. Dear Carolyn, one of my closest friends, though I may not have ranked that high with her, told me she was going to sell her expensive beach house herself, as opposed to listing it with an agent, whom I expected to be me. She created a digital marketing campaign and website and asked me one question, which I stupidly chose not to answer. Do you think $XX is a little high? Since she was selling it herself, I did not view it as appropriate to comment on her pricing. I then told a few mutual friends she was making a big mistake trying to sell a high-end house with no agent. This eventually got back to her, and she stopped communicating with me. When I tried to get the friendship back on track with a friendly email, she told me she had heard from a number of friends that I was bad-mouthing her decisions, and that she was disappointed I declined to provide any opinion of her price based on market data, despite many commissions she had steered to me over the years. In the rearview mirror, I see that my disappointment in not getting her listing led me to say a few things I wish I hadn't. She did sell it herself. Do I let time pass and try again? How do I come to terms with losing a 30-year friend? Signed, Regretful Realtor. Dear Regretful Realtor, I don't see anywhere in your letter that you apologize to your friend for withholding help or bad-mouthing her. The only outreach you mention is your friendly email. If that's accurate, no apology, then handing this over to time now would make you 0 for 4. Meaning in 4 chances to own this and do the right thing. You have chosen a dodge all 4 times, a different one each time, but dodges nonetheless. Dodge number 1. Spitefully refusing to help your friend instead of telling her the truth. I'm disappointed not to get the listing. For the record, you both had an out. Hers was not to do business with friends, and yours was not to give away your expertise. Though if she did, in fact, steer businesses your way, then turning her down was petty. Dodge number 2. Bad-mouthing her to friends, again reaching for payback over the harder-to-voice truth of your hurt feelings. Dodge number 3. That disingenuous email. Instead of admitting you sold her out, you played dumb and left her to spell out what she knew. Dodge number 4. Deferring to time, also known as avoiding the subject. If I'm wrong about this and you have indeed owned your errors in full, which includes apologies, by the way, to mutual friends you put in the middle, then it's my turn to say I'm sorry. Once you've expressed remorse, letting time pass stops being evasive and becomes a sign of respect, allowing the recipient to respond to your apology or not without pressure. Not knowing whether you apologized, I'm leaving the final answer to you and your capacity to be honest with yourself. You certainly know you made bad choices, but you owe it to yourself to ask when and why your priorities got so out of whack that a listing, in other words, getting mine, mattered more than the way you treated friends. What happens to your 30-year friendship is largely up to your friend now. And that completes her column, Denied a Lucrative Beach House Listing, Agent Sells Out Friendship. And that's Ask Carolyn for today. And that's it for the opinions today. Let's look at the almanac for today. Today in history, on this date, in 1813, Shawnee Chief Tecumseh, a leader in the fight against white settlement, was killed in the Battle of Thames in Ontario, Canada, during the War of 1812. He had joined British forces as a brigadier general with the promise of an independent Native American nation under British protection should they win. 1905, Wilbur Wright made the longest flight of the Wright Flyer 3, covering 24 miles in 39 minutes. 1910, Portugal becomes a republic following a successful revolt against King Manuel II. 1930, the maiden voyage of the massive British-built airship R-101 ended in a fiery crash that killed 48 people in Beauvais, France, during the golden age of lighter-than-air dirigible aviation. 1945, a six-month strike by Hollywood set decorators turned into a riot at the gates of Warner Brothers Studios, resulting in what's known as Hollywood Black Friday. 1947, President Harry S. Truman made the nation's first televised presidential address, urging citizens to conserve food on account of hunger in post-war Europe. 1962, the Beatles released their iconic song, Love Me Do, sparking the rise of Beatlemania and setting them on the path to becoming one of history's most famous bands. 1962, the James Bond film Dr. No debuted in London, the first of what became a legendary film series featuring the charismatic British secret agent, then played by Sean Connery. 1969, and for something completely different, BBC debuted Monty Python's Flying Circus, a groundbreaking British TV show by arguably the most beloved absurdist comedy troupe in the world. In 2011, Apple co-founder Steve Jobs died at the age of 56 after a long battle with cancer. Widely considered a visionary pioneer, his groundbreaking technology transformed modern life around the globe. 2015, then-Governor Jerry Brown of California signed a bill giving terminally ill patients the right to die. And in 2017, the New York Times published a bombshell investigation into allegations against Harvey Weinstein, sparking the beginning of the hashtag MeToo movement. Those come from Susan Jobe of USA Today Network. And we do have some celebrity birthdays today. Singer Steve Miller of the Steve Miller Band turns 82. Actor Karen Allen, 74. Actor Clive Barker, 73. Astrophysicist author Neil deGrasse Tyson, 67. Artist architect of the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C., Maya Lin, 66, Actor Daniel Baldwin, 65. Actor Guy Pearce, 58. Film director Tim Hooper, 53. Actor Kate Winslet, 50. Actor Parminder Nagra, 50. Actor Scott Weiniger, 50. Actor Monica Rial, 50. And actor Jesse Eisenberg, 42. Heiress Nikki Hilton, 42. Actor Taylor Page, 35. Social media personality Sarah Schauer, 32. Rapper-singer Erica Banks, 27. And actor Jacob Tremblay, 19. And those are from USA Today Network. And those are the birthdays for today. I'll move now to the horoscope. I'll begin with Aries, March 21st to April 19th. Your presence is requested for after-work hang, but you're just not feeling it. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. Are you looking for love or attention? You're not sure. Gemini, May 21st to June 21st. Business is your priority. A loved one feels overlooked. Cancer, June 22nd to July 22nd. Unclear communication? Your mood swing or a friend's derails a scheduled catch-up. Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd. Scarcity mentality rearing its head? A morning financial snafu has you in crisis mode. Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd. Feeling shortchanged? The praise you expected isn't forthcoming. What gives? Libra, September 23rd to October 23rd. Noticing some red flags? A romantic situationship has you feeling down. Scorpio, October 24th to November 21st. You've been left out of the group chat's plans. Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st. Feeling disconnected from a loved one? This situation is intensified because your co-working relationships have been so good lately. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. You might be looking for love in the wrong places. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. Do they lift you up when you're feeling down? An alliance is tested. And Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. Efforts to please a partner fall flat. Try not to overreact. And that is the horoscope for today, Sunday, October 5th, 2025. I'll end today's broadcast with a look at a few of the comics. I'll begin with Blondie. The scene is Dagwood is at work talking to his boss, who is busy at his computer. Dagwood says, "Boss, I've heard you're going to replace our one-week vacation with a three-day weekend." The boss says, "I heard that crazy rumor too, Bumstead." Bumstead says, "Crazy rumor?" His boss says, "I'm afraid so. Now that you brought it up, it might be food for thought. It's genius, in fact. Why should employees get paid for taking time off from work?" Bumstead has a questionable look on his face. His boss says, "Starting that crazy rumor was probably the best idea I've ever had." Next is Peanuts. Sally is standing there saying, "Where are we going?" Then she's walking with Charlie Brown. "Why are we walking to school this way?" she said. Charlie says, "I think it's going to be easier to cross the street up here. There's a traffic tie-up on 3rd Street. There's also a fender bender on Marshall Avenue and heavy traffic near the tunnel before the on-ramp." Sally said, "How do you know all this?" And he says, "The traffic helicopter." And the scene is Snoopy acting as a helicopter, chop, 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 chop. Next up, it's Garfield. We have Garfield and John snoozing in bed. John says, and Garfield is right up against John's face. John says, Garfield, I can't move. You've gained a lot of weight. And Garfield says, nah, I just invited some friends over. And there's four other dogs also on John's body. Next up is Pickles by Brian Crane. The scene is Earl's wife is sitting on the couch with a cat. He's leaning over the back of the couch, and Earl says, do you think that cat really cares anything about you? His wife says, of course, she loves me. Earl says, oh yeah, I heard of a lady who owned a cat for years. She thought the cat truly cared about her. Then a lady down the street started leaving gourmet cat food on her porch. The cat found it and decided it was better than what she'd been getting. So guess what? The cat stayed there. The wife looks at the cat and says, Muffin would never do that to me, would you, Muffy? And the cat is thinking, I'm doing it now. I actually belong to the lady down the street. And lastly, Dennis the Menace. Dennis is looking in the room. His parents are talking to another couple. His next scene is he's knocking at the door of Mr. Wilson's house. Mr. Wilson says, you again? Dennis says, my parents have visitors. Mr. Wilson says, I know someone I'd like to see visit your house sometime. Dennis says, who? And Mr. Wilson says, you. And that completes the comics, and that also completes the broadcast today. You've been listening to the second hour of the Arizona Republic, the Sunday, October 5th, 2025 issue, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your volunteer reader. I hope you enjoyed the program today. Stay well, stay safe, have a wonderful week, and keep listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today.